today having many senior teachers here, I'd like to also invite one of them, Ajahn Sona, to give some reflections and both for the newly ordained bhikkhu as well as for the sort of the gathered sangha and the gathered lay community.
Oh, thank you very much. It seems to be my fate in life. I'll do my best. I sometimes feel a little sorry for lay people who are invited to ceremonies like this. When I see that it goes on for 2 hours, I sometimes think the monastics have great patience. They've been trained and everything, but the poor lay people sitting out there, they wonder what they think. But recently, I went to a seminar on taxation for charitable organizations presented by the Government of Canada, and it was 3 hours long, no breaks, utterly boring, and the hardest chairs I've ever sat on in my life. And I looked around, and it was all lay people, and they did fine. I was squiggling away. So I realize you have more patience and strength than I sometimes think. So I hope that not to test it too much. well, I have been at a number of these ceremonies, and each time it's always beautiful. I remember my own as a quite a grueling experience. This was certainly a lot more civilized and less duress. So I'd like to reflect a little bit on this, the nature of going forth into the holy life. And one of the things is that ceremonies like this, where there's a lot of discipline and tight use of robes and carefully orchestrated movements and well-rehearsed Pali formulas and everything, sometimes one looking on might wonder where the beauty and the joy could be in this life, but it certainly is about that, and we always want to remember it. Sometimes when we're memorizing our Pali verses and so forth, that we can also think, where's the joy in it? But it is about that, and it's important that we remember that. That is, the Buddha talks about Kalyana, the beautiful, and that thing, this is something which is beautiful in the beginning. Also, not just at the end, but in the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. And so, for the candidate, other monks, and also for the lay practitioners, I hope that to encourage you also to get on with the beautiful as soon as you can, not to wait, to immerse yourself in it quickly. I particularly reflect on the sixth factor, the Eightfold Path, that is the factor of right effort, sama vayamo, the making effort. It's often not talked about specifically, but after reflecting on it for a long time, I realize that it's reminded me of something. I know that the Four Noble Truths are often compared to a physician's prescription, that is, that there is suffering, there is a cause of suffering, there's an end to suffering, and there's a way to the end of suffering, is similar to when you go to the doctor. He determines that, yes, you have an illness, and yes, this is the cause of it, and yes, there is a cure for it, and this is the course of the penicillin that you're going to have to take, etc. And of course, this is at the center of this holy life. And what is that course of penicillin? Includes this sixth factor, what's called right effort. And this effort is also in four parts. The first part is the removal of unwholesome mental states that have arisen. The next part is the prevention of the arising in the future of mental unwholesome mental states. Then there are two positive aspects. There is the maintenance of positive mental wholesome mental states that have arisen, or emotional states. And thirdly, to bring into existence beautiful wholesome mental states that have not yet arisen. These are the four right efforts. And as I reflect on these, and I find myself in older age appreciating gardens more, I realize this is gardening. That this is what a simile for gardening. And it's, as I reflect also on the historical period that the Buddha is in, the 5th century BC, that there are recently, the civilizations throughout Asia are recently emerging from the hunter-gatherer phase into the age when you cultivate. The word for meditation in Buddhism, of course, the Buddha never used the word meditate. That is an English word. So what did he use? He used the word bhavana, roughly, which means to cultivate, an agricultural simile. And this is the movement when we enter into the Sangha, or you enter into the discipline as a layperson into the meditative cultivative tradition. You're coming out of the life of the hunter-gatherer. You are giving up, you're taking up a new lifestyle, and it can be quite a radical difference. The hunter-gatherer goes out not knowing what, but all they know is that you've got to go out into the forest, into the to seek enough to get by on for another day. And that is the way many people in our society live. They step out the door hunting and gathering outside in the world, through the senses outside of the world, hoping for a hit, and often coming home with nothing, sometimes getting satisfaction, having a little bit of a war dance at home after celebrating the catch or a successful hunt. So it goes on, but it can become a rather unsatisfactory way of living. And so this idea that perhaps we could, instead of just going out and plucking wild things, perhaps we could plant them in our backyard. And that if we're patient, we start to understand how things grow and what it is that is not of value to us and should be removed, and how to prevent the reoccurrence of certain weeds. And to look around and appreciate what is already there, we do, if we look, we may find we have indeed some beautiful moments in life and beautiful characteristics, and we should be protective of those and maintain those. And then we should aspire to bring into our lives some higher emotional and mental states that we have read about, heard about, seen about in other people, and that we would like to imbibe and in fact become. And so those are the fourth stage of the right effort, the cultivation of wholesome mental and emotional qualities which have not yet arisen. And so we proceed to garden. There was a bit of a discourse on the rules of conduct called the Vinaya, and these are really, I think of these as a kind of a wall around the garden, a beautiful stone wall. In fact, the more we landscape around our monastery and I begin to think about the qualities of gardens, the wall that surrounds the garden is also part of the garden, and it is protective, has a number of functions, but it also should be beautiful. And the following of the Vinaya is also not a grim duty, but also needs to be invested with beauty. It is similar to maybe flower arranging. The Buddha, in fact, referred to the rules of conduct, the Vinaya, as as a thread which bound a heap of flowers. He said that the Dhamma, the teachings of the Buddha, would not last long unless they were like a heap of flowers, very beautiful, But if in a wind like today you had a heap of flowers on a flat board out in the wind, they will blow away. But if you take a thread, a string, and tie those flowers together, then the wind will not scatter them. And that thread, that string, is this Vinaya, a very carefully and wisely worked out rules of conduct, both for the person and in their interaction with the other rest of the community. So this is a very beautiful image, and when we reflect on Dhamma, we really have to look for these extraordinarily beautiful images. This little package here, this monastery, the preservation of the Dhamma is a heap of flowers tied up with a string. And a gorgeous image indeed, in that we cannot separate this quality of virtuous behavior from beauty. And that's back again to beautiful in the beginning. And if we find it onerous, heavy, burdensome, and so forth, then we have to recognize that this is not the purpose of it, but the purpose is to raise a quality of beauty in our outward aspects, our aspects of our speech, and also aspects of our emotional and mental life. A simile for these cultivation of virtues. There are two virtues I just want to mention that are very much a part of this going forth, and that is, which has been mentioned, is sila, the virtuous behavior, and renunciation. There are two similes which I find, and similes happen to work for me because they're images, which I find are useful to keep it in mind. And the first is, sila is compared to a yak. A yak is a type of ox, and it has a peculiar, very long and wide tail that goes right to the ground. It's quite impressive, like a long mane of hair. They're a large, very large animal, and they graze in the wild through the brambles. And one of the peculiarities of this animal is that in grazing in the brambles, sometimes it gets its tail tangled up in the brambles. But this tail is so valuable to the ox, it understands its evolution has provided it with this tail to keep insects away, to provide all kinds of protective measures for it. So this animal will not break its tail even for the sake of its life. When it gets its tail tangled up in the brambles, it will take however long it takes to work itself out of those brambles without breaking that tail. That is a simile for virtue. And we're bound to get our tails tangled up in life along the way. And situations arise where we get squeezed two ways and so forth, but we do have to be like that yak and just be patient and slow down and realize there's no hurry. We under no circumstance do we break this protection which protects our sense of lightheartedness and clarity of mind, prevents us from having a lot of guilt and remorse over things that we should have slowed down and done in a thoughtful, wise way. So, for a new monk, to learn these ways of conduct well, to enjoy reflecting on them and reflecting on them as if you were looking at a bouquet of flowers, or a painting of a bouquet of flowers, and to realize they're very beautiful, and to take your time, and when you get tangled up in little scenarios, as will happen in life, to extract yourself very carefully and remembering this image of the yak. The other type of perfection of character, which is intrinsic to the holy life, is this renunciation. And the image given is, as a prisoner thinks of only one thing night and day, one who is in a jail thinks of only one thing night and day, that is, guess. When am I going to get out of here? This is the spirit of renunciation. Renunciation, sometimes from the outside world, seems to be a dreadful kind of giving up. See how much you can give up and how long you can stand it. kind of an Olympics of austerities and perseverance. It doesn't seem all that appealing, but really it's about one wants to renounce because one feels one is in jail already. One wants to get out of jail. It's not a kind of a deprivation teaching. It's about getting out of jail. And so what is it we see the jail? The jail is the life of the hunter-gatherer in some ways. We want to move on to the beautiful garden. A lovely phrase in English, I don't remember who it was, one of the poets said, "All I want in life is a small house and a large garden." And that's an appealing image. And if we work towards that, we feel that we're trapped by the vagaries of life, having to depend on the outside world for our well-being and happiness. That is a very precarious and problematic way of living. And if we have some disappointment about that, disenchantment about that, we're on the right track. Now, not everybody will understand this language. I remember the reading the Catholic monk Thomas Merton, who had become a monk in the late 40s. In Louisville, Kentucky, where I'm soon heading, he said that to become a monk in the United States in the 20th century presents itself to the ordinary person as a scandal and an outrage. This is probably true today. Because we're used to it, I'm now almost 20 years as a monk, I'm quite used to it. I've forgotten that it's a scandal and outrage to be a monk. The idea of just being in this very incomprehensible way of life to the ordinary person. They're moving in another direction. And what is such a scandal and outrage about the thing? What the scandal and the outrage is that it's a denial of the value that ordinary people put on ordinary things in life. We seem to be walking away from this. This is something of an insult, especially if a person puts a lot of effort into that kind of the getting of these things. So, but it has to be understood what it is, why we are disappointed. Now, not all monks are disappointed. Some are entering the robes for various reasons, but ultimately, if they were wise, they would be disappointed, not with the monastic life, but the world. And I hope that it slowly creeps up on them, this disenchantment and disappointment. This is a very necessary thing. Now, it shouldn't be thought of as a depression. It would be like having no way out of jail if there wasn't a way out of jail. So the motivation is right if we are a little, a wee bit weary of the world and we are seeking an alternative. It would be dreadful if there were no alternative, but obviously this monastic calling presents itself as an alternative, and it's for the one who is experiencing disappointment, some vague nibbindity, this kind of disappointment, weariness with the world, to encounter this alternative lifestyle of the monk, both in the Western traditions and in the Eastern traditions, is like coming across an oasis, a possibility. So this process of renunciation and the cultivation, the careful preservation of your realistic memory of the world, your life before becoming a monk, how the world really was, and maybe staying as a monk is really how good a memory you have. It's amazing how the memory forgets the reality of things, but this process of mindfulness is a form of memory, the memory of the real. And we can also use in the holy life our imagination and our memory but as long as we remember the real and we imagine the real nature of life. So this process of right effort, you are now in an ideal situation. You've been given a good parcel of land, good instructors for your agricultural endeavor, and you do have a few rocks to clear, a few weeds to pull, but there's a few flowers there, I'm sure. I haven't really gotten to know Chinda, but I can already feel there's a few flowers there already, quite nice to preserve, and many more to be planted. So I'm welcoming him to this undertaking and to be really looking forward to this gardening expedition, a cultivated life. I also, for the lay people who are listening, I encourage you in your spare time to raise gardens as well. And that's the thing of maybe the difference between the monastic life and the lay life is that we the monks just have more time to garden. And that's what the Buddha said, is that, like, why should you become a monk? If anybody can garden, why should you become a monk? It's just that there's more time. We don't have to go out and do the other part-time hunting, gathering, and then part-time gardening. We get to garden full-time. So I would like to leave those images with you, thinking of the nourishment that comes from the gardening, the beauty that comes from the gardening, the enjoyment of the work. Most people, at least as they get older, they like to, the idea of gardening appeals to them. Sometimes when you're younger, the idea of flowers and gardens and stuff is not exactly exciting, but I call it the awakening of wisdom to have an appreciation of this. Some people get it very early, some people later. So I would welcome Tunda to the fringes of society, the margins of society. In the words of Socrates and Plato, there are three types that live outside of society, at the margins of society: the criminal, the insane, and the wise. Sometimes we find ourselves in the same monastery, but in general, the predominant population is wise. And we, in fact, we welcome the crazy and the criminal, because sometimes it's a refuge as well. And we want to share our garden with them. The great majority of people find themselves in the middle. They're neither criminal, they're neither insane, and they're, well, I'll leave it at that. So I congratulate anybody who has the temerity to go to the margins and try this lifestyle on, and I hope that it's fueled by the appropriate disillusionment with the hunter-gatherer life and the appropriate enthusiasm for a life of cultivation, of beauty. So I will leave these remarks for now. Thank you. Sadhu karanga tamasi.